The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
You know, there wasn't much going right, and then Colin scores. It just looked like things changed out. Were you guys able to carry that into the next game, possibly?
For sure. It's a long series, and that's just game one. So we were saying, regardless of the score, we're just going to play our game and carry that over into game two.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? In the first ever playoff game at TechCU Arena, the San Jose Barracuda had a lot go wrong for them, and I mean that in the sense that Colorado had almost everything go right for them. You look at the final, 6-3. That's a 4-3 game with two empty net goals, a game in which San Jose was the better team early on, only to have a bad pass lead to the first goal going down 1-0, only to give up two power play goals along the way to this loss, which was really a 4-3 game until those two empty netters were added on. But San Jose got a dose of reality that things aren't going to go their way like it did in their opening series against Ontario. I can make the argument in the Ontario series that the Barracuda were the recipients of the breaks. The bounces went their way, and it led them to a two-game sweep of Ontario to advance to this second round. And there's nothing wrong with that. You create your own luck in the playoffs. And even though I'm not a big believer in luck, it feels like there are instances where you can be your own worst enemy and still walk away with a win. And the San Jose Barracuda, at a certain point of last night's game, when they got back into it and suddenly it's 4-3, looked like they were going to be able to do that. Looked like they were going to be able to give themselves a chance to at least tie and send it to overtime. That's obviously not the way it went down, but you know, so much of this game, you saw early on that San Jose was the more aggressive team. They were being physical. They were doing a lot of things right. But then what happens? A mistake. And mistakes will punish you every single time. And that's exactly what happened in that game against Colorado. Colorado was dynamite all year long. They were one of the best teams in the A. And I think you know that that's a team that can take advantage of another team's mistakes. And that's what they did. So when San Jose made a bad pass, when they found themselves on the power play, Colorado that is, they were able to take advantage. And San Jose, on the flip side, was not. One of my most frustrating parts of the game last night was at the end of the second period when the Barracuda were on the power play, and it just looked like they weren't getting much going. And it showed how much, I think, at that point of the game, Colorado had gotten into their heads on the way that they were breaking things up in the neutral zone and really pressuring San Jose and not being able to get the breakout going, because they would bring it out of their own end, trying to escape the forecheck, and then they would turn it over in the neutral zone, and then suddenly Colorado would be coming back in the other direction. And you combine that with some shots that take some tips, that take some redirections, that get past Askarov. You combine that in a game where it seemed like the Barracuda were just a little bit off in terms of their shot selection, in terms of getting shots on target. And it added up to a performance where you felt like they were just riding that line of being so close to making things go right, but being so far from being able to walk away with a win when all was said and done. And I think that the way that they did respond in that game as it got later, as they looked at the deficit of being down 4-1 and they fought their way back into it, I do believe that there is some momentum they can take from game number one and bring that into game number two. And I think that had they not been able to get things going in game number one the way they did late, then game two might be that much more daunting. But I think they should be confident. I think they should feel good about their prospects going into game number two, because they did a lot of things wrong in game number one. They did a lot of things where they were still giving themselves an opportunity despite being their own worst enemy. So you have to look at the two sides of it. Mistakes, penalties. And yes, we didn't love all those penalties, and we can complain about the refs all we want, but as Drew Remenda said during the broadcast, that's a loser's lament. And I do believe that. If you want to win the game, be so good that you can control the outcome beyond what you can't control. You cannot control what the officials are going to call. You cannot control what's going to be a 4-minute minor, what's going to be a 2-minute minor, what the game is going to do in terms of the officiating. But if you outscore the officiating, if you give yourself a chance to win, you don't have to worry about those things. So again, Drew Remenda, right as usual, about it being a loser's lament. Now, that's not me saying that you and I have to be in love with what we saw from the officials. I most certainly wasn't, but I'm also smart enough to say that's not what cost them the game. You can go back and talk about the way that they, you know, did not, you know, make a right pass at the right moment early on, and that leads to a goal. Yeah, that changes games. Goals change games. And then you can talk about some of their play on the kill. You know, you had a Bisted goal on the kill, which was great, a big moment. You're down 2-0, and they fight their way back into the game. But at the same time, they didn't carry that momentum. They didn't respond from that. And then again, you give up goals shortly thereafter, and you're suddenly staring at a big hole once again. You're thinking, how did this happen? That's the situation that the Barracuda found themselves in consistently. So these things you look at big picture and you think, okay, how do they respond to it? How do they give themselves a better opportunity? How do they find their way back into these series? And I just think that looking at everything that Game 2 will provide, I don't think that they're going to have too hard of a chance getting back into it. I think they're going to be very upset with the way that they played in Game number 1. And I think also if they get anything close to the atmosphere they had on Friday night, they are going to get a monumental boost from the crowd once again, because TechCU sounded amazing last night. I don't think anyone can deny that. A great atmosphere, the first ever playoff game at TechCU. You had a great opportunity. They weren't able to take advantage. They know that they're not going to see this crowd every single night at TechCU. They know that this is their opportunity. They want to send those fans home happy. And I know they were disappointed not to be able to do so last night. And I think that's an important part of what they're bringing. And so right now, the Barracuda can look at game number one and say, yeah, it's a close game until those two empty netters. What did they do to themselves to make it a close game? How did they shoot themselves in the foot? How can they improve upon these things? And I think they're all relatively simple things that they can improve upon. I don't think there's any great takeaway that you look at and say, okay, this is an unwinnable series. No, I think that Colorado was, you know, able to get the bounces to go their way. They were a fortunate team in game number one. That's not to say they didn't earn it. Colorado played a good game. They took advantage of what was given to them, but they also were, you know, a recipient of some fortunate bounces. They were a fortunate team. I'll tell you who I really liked out of last night's game, though, was Patrick Giles. I thought he played an absolutely phenomenal game. I loved the opportunities that he created. He had one shorthanded where he broke away, and, you know, he's a big guy. You know, I'm not a small individual. You know, I'm almost 6 feet tall, I'll put it that way. When I stood next to Patrick Giles for the first time, I kind of looked at him and said, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. This guy is a massive individual, and I understand 100% why the Sharks wanted to acquire him, why they wanted to give him a chance, why they think there's something there. But his speed, his physicality, his skill set, I thought was really fun to watch last night, and I think that, you know, you watch the way that a guy like that with that kind of size can impact a game. You know, he's got a lot of game to grow into. He's got a lot of ability to take things forward. And I think that's a great opportunity for him. But, you know, when you see a guy of that size have that type of speed, have that type of ability, it's fun to watch. And there's little things that you're learning about this team, you know, in real time, I guess, because we've gotten to see a little bit of Giles at the NHL level, but now we're seeing more of him, you know, with the Barracuda. And, you know, the same thing can be said about an Ostapchuk, who I thought we did get to see some of, you know, with the Sharks this year, but now we're seeing more of his game. You know, and I think Colin Graf, he continues to play an absolutely phenomenal game and came through with another goal last night. And, you know, every time you're looking at who's going to be a part of this, you know, future of the team, you know, it's guys that were recent acquisitions for San Jose. You know, Ostapchuk came at the deadline. You know, Colin Graf came at the end of last year to San Jose and didn't even play with the Barracuda last year and, you know, dominated his way up from the A into the NHL this year and now is back getting a chance once again. You know, that's something that you want to see. Those are names for the future. Lucas Carlson coming through with a, you know, a big play last night. He gets on the board for San Jose. I thought that Jimmy Schultz played a good game trying to carry the team in the sense of leadership without Andrew Podorowski there. Podorowski still on his way back from injury. I know he's been a little bit more positive in that regard, but I don't know if we're going to get him back during this series. So hopefully the Barracuda can take care of business in this series and give him more time to heal. But again, these are all big players who have been able to come through for the Barracuda and give them more talent, give them more ability, and hopefully they'll continue to do so going forward. On the other side of things, you got to give a lot of credit to Trent Miner, the goalie for Colorado. last night. I thought that he played an excellent game, you know, especially early on when he was shutting San Jose down, when San Jose would get some good looks when they were on frame. He was making the big stops. He was making the big saves. And I think that that's one of the things that I always pay attention to. It's not necessarily about making every save. It's about making the big save when you have to. And I think that's something that, you know, Trent Miner did early in that game. He shut down San Jose time and time again. Yeah, Philip Bisted comes five hole on a penalty kill to give him an opportunity to get back into the game. And then, you know, Miner gets beat. The Eagles add on a couple more goals and he keeps on making the saves. That's what I'm always going to pay attention to when I'm looking at goalies. It's not about making every stop. It's about making the ones that count in critical game situations. And critical game situations happen not just for a team when they are on the kill, but also for the goalie when they're on the kill. And also for the goalie when they're on the power play, because you don't want to give up a shorthanded goal. And they did. And he didn't let them phase him. He didn't let them take him out of his game. He kept on playing very good hockey after that fact, and it was, you know, too little too late from San Jose as they got themselves back into the game, because he had made all the big saves earlier in the game. He had made all the big stops up to that point. Did he get beat on a shorthanded goal? Yeah, that happens. You're not going to be perfect. But when the other critical moments of the game happened, he came through with flying colors. Whereas San Jose, when they had an opportunity, a bad pass leads to a goal. When they were on the kill, they gave up a couple of power play goals. When you needed Askarov to pull a save out of his hat, he wasn't able to do so. And I'm not blaming Askarov for that. That's just the way it goes, because Askarov on more than, you know, a variety of situations has been able to pull a save out of nowhere. And you're thinking, how does that happen? Well, that's because he's extremely talented. But sometimes when there's a tip involved, when there's a redirection, when there's maybe a little bit of goalie contact, it's not always going to go your way. And so that's what happens in the game of hockey, especially when you're talking about a high level like the AHL and we're talking about the playoffs. So for San Jose, you would hope that they're able to get a little bit more of a bounce or break their way in the next game. But, you know, the pendulum swings. You know, we look at all these series that are happening now, you know, in the National Hockey League and in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you've seen teams go up. And you've seen the other team come roaring back, and the pendulum will swing. You've seen a goalie get beat one night, and the next night he comes up with a great performance. That's how it goes at high-level sports. Momentum is created. Momentum is earned. Momentum swings. It's not always fair. It's not always predictable, but that's part of the reality that is life. Not just the National Hockey League, but the American Hockey League as well. Ultimately, though, there's some things to learn from in this game. One, how to handle the forecheck and the way that they work in the neutral zone to slow down San Jose's attack. They've got to have a better adjustment. They've got to move the puck faster. They've got to be able to create space. They've got to be quicker on the breakout. That's going to be a big part of finding success in game number two. Also, not shooting themselves in the foot. Make sure you're not taking bad penalties. Make sure you're not giving the puck away. Make sure you're not making the same mistakes that led you to a big deficit in this game. These are all correctable. These are all things they can find their way through in game number two on Sunday. I'm excited for it. And another man who is excited about game number two is Nick Nolenberger, who I spoke with after last night's game. All right, we are now joined on the Sharks Audio Network by Nick Nolenberger after the Barracuda fall 6-3 to Colorado in game one of the second round of these Calder Cup playoffs, a game that in no way is indicative of a 6-3 final, a game in which the Barracuda had everything go against them that could go against them. At times, though, were also their own worst enemy. So, Noli, you know, just your first reactions now as I've got you after this game tonight as you try and, you know, make sense of that 6-3 final.
Well, this is a Colorado team that finished atop the division for a reason. They had 94 points. They are a hardworking team, opportunistic offensively. They clog everything up in front of their net. It's hard to get pucks through. They defend the blue paint with everything they've got in it. It was a game in which I felt like they won the battle in front of their own net. They won the battle in the Barracuda net. And then special teams were a huge factor of the game, too. And the Barracuda outshot the Eagles 12-6 in the first period. But they had a couple of chances they didn't capitalize on. Colorado takes advantage of a bad change by the Cuda to open up the scoring. Then you get to the second period. It's a one-goal game. Barracuda get called for, you know, I don't mean to jump on the refs, but a little bit of a ticky-tack call, because prior to that point, they were really letting things go. But Luca Cagnone called for a hold, leads to a power play. Colorado capitalized on it. All of a sudden, they're up 2-0. Moments after that, the Barracuda take a double minor for high sticking. Colorado scores again. Special teams a major factor. And I felt like the battle in front of both nets was one of the biggest impacts in the game. The Barracuda just got outworked in front of the net. The effort was there. They were in the hockey game. They got within a goal in the third period. But this is a extremely solid Colorado team up and down their lineup. They can roll all four lines. They're really stout defensively. They got some really good goaltending tonight. So if you don't take advantage of your chances and then you lose the special teams battle, you're probably not going to win the hockey game.
No, that's well said. And I know that the point that you make about the officiating, as Drew Remenda said multiple times during the broadcast, was the loser's lament. But yeah, I mean, you saw the way that Luka responded to that penalty getting called. And you know, special teams matter. You know, goals change games. And when you give up the momentum and then you give up goals, especially the way that they did to go down, and, you know, even then they fight their way back into it multiple times in this game. You get it 2-1, and then suddenly, you know, it just keeps on, you know, them adding on goals. And it seemed like the Barracuda, to what Drew was talking about after this game, look back at it and say, okay, we made mistakes in these issues. We lost the special teams battle. But at the same time, they fought their way back to make it a 4-3 game. It felt like momentum was completely going their way. They give up the empty netter to make it 5-3, and then it's 6-3. But there is a lot to like about this game as well. And I do think that in a game in which you're down 4-1, the fact that they were able to fight their way back into it, even though they did give up a couple empty netters, I also think about how that might carry over into game two on Sunday night.
Well, I said that to Drew during the broadcast as well. These series, they're certainly not sprints. They really are marathons. Now, when you lose that first game, statistically, in the NHL, at least in the best of seven series, your percentages of winning the series skyrocket compared to falling behind 0-1. But this series is far from over. Barracuda, in my opinion, ill afford to lose game two on Sunday, because then it shifts to Loveland. The Eagles were absolutely dominant on home ice this year. They were the best home team in the league. I think they were plus 60 in goal differential on home ice. They are very hard to beat. It's a great, great atmosphere. The building, Blue Arena, holds about 5,500 people. They pack it every day of the week. They have games. So in my mind, the Barracuda really, really have to find a way to bear down and get a win on. As you mentioned, there were so many points in the game, it felt like it was teetering and it could have went San Jose's way. And that's ends up being a victory in game one. It was really that close so many different times in the hockey game. But when you don't maybe get a call here or there, or there's a lapse in execution, or you don't get a bounce, and that ends up being the difference in a hockey game, you know, this time of year, it's so tight out there. The chances are so limited that if you don't take advantage of them, usually you find yourself on the losing end of things.
Was that the best atmosphere you've seen at Texas Arena?
Yeah, without a doubt. Unbelievable. And a huge, huge shout out to, we have a pretty small staff, and you know, everybody's putting towels on seats, 4,200 seats this morning. Our marketing crew was here late until like 11 o'clock at night, decorating the arena, just making sure it was not only a great atmosphere, but it looked awesome when people walked into the building. I mean, it looked amazing. And yeah, I think from a gate standpoint, more bodies and seats than we've had ever. So although it is just a standard show, the Barracuda, I think, had almost 10 of them this year. This was the best crowd. And the atmosphere was incredible. People were into the game. There was a buzz even before the game started. It felt like playoff hockey. And this is what they dreamed of, I think, when they envisioned this team moving out west and eventually getting its own building, a really intimate building that was on top of you. And come playoff time, it would really be a home ice advantage. So, unbelievable crowd tonight. So much fun to call a game in front of it. And looking forward to Sunday. We're expecting another really good one.
How much do you think this team is missing the AHL's MVP in the injured Andrew Podorowski? Obviously, he said he's still week to week. It sounds like that he's a little bit positive on his direction, but still no indication on when he'll be back.
I mean, it's hard to even quantify how important of a player he is. I mean, he's just a great locker room guy, but his production is off the charts, and he's a winner. He's been to the finals four times in his career. He's won two Calder Cups. It is a long road to win a championship in the AHL. Unlike the NHL, it's actually five series if you don't win your division like Colorado did, getting a opening round bye. So it is a long stretch. I was looking at the dates the finals were last year, and it was late June. So this thing can go for 2 months. And to have a guy like Paul Dorowski, who has been there and done that, he helped lead Coachella Valley to back-to-back finals, won a couple of championships, including one with Ryan Warsawski in Chicago. He absolutely knows what it takes to get the job done. And for him not to be in the lineup, I think, has been a major, major factor. The Barracuda, in my mind, are struggling to generate a lot of offense. And this was the MVP of the league for a reason. He led the league in scoring, dynamic on the power play, at 13 power play goals this year, second only to teammate Daniil Gushin. And the power play went 0-for-3 tonight. It felt a little bit stale at times. And not having Paul Dorowski, I think, has been a major factor. Now, they were able to overcome it in round number one, but this is a different beast in Colorado. So it's really been too bad that he hasn't been available. It's just a tough break, missed the final nine games of the regular season. But hopefully the Barracuda can tread water, get out of this round, and Paul Dorowski could potentially play with the group in round number three. I'm not completely ruling him out for this second round, but it just seems unlikely at this point.
How much of the, not offense, obviously, but maybe just of the load to shoulder, is this now falling on Jimmy Schultz, who, like Podorowski, has been in these big situations, knows what it takes to win? It's not like he's going to carry the team's offense, but it feels like if there's a time where he's going to prove why he is the captain of this team, this would be it.
Well, he was really good tonight. I thought he was outstanding in the two games against Ontario. He, like Paul Dorowski, knows what it takes to get to the final. He was part of that Firebird team as well. But it's, you know, Jimmy, you spent a little bit of time with him calling some games at the Barrack early in the season. He is a salt of the earth human being. And not only does he lead just out of pure respect and kindness, he's also one of the hardest working guys on the team. He'll get there early, one of the earliest guys, if not the earliest. Every day he stays later than everybody else, getting post game counts in, and carries himself like a pro's pro. And you see it on the ice, the way he plays, the way he commits and puts his body on the line. There's this funny little thing going in the locker room. It's kind of a rallying cry, and it says "Play like a pig." They've got T-shirts and signs on the wall. And how it all started was, who sacrifices more for breakfast? Is it the chicken who gives up just the eggs, or is it the pig who sacrifices his whole body? It's the pig. And that's been kind of the rallying cry. And I think Jimmy Schultz is a perfect example of doing whatever it takes to win hockey games. And it's another great example. He's outstanding in these playoffs. He's been thrust into the 1C role with no Paul Dorowski. Had a goal tonight, three assists in the opening round. He played, I think, 22 games 2 years ago in the Stanley Cup playoffs with Florida. So he knows what it takes to be successful come postseason play. So without a doubt, you look at guys like Jimmy Schultz, you look at guys like Colin White and Luke Carlson, these guys who have been here and done that to kind of lead the way and be the beacon of light for all these young players. And at the same time, it's trial by fire. You guys have to swim come this time of year, and you need young players to pull the rope as well to be successful.
Well, Nolly, I will let you go because I know it's been a long day for you, but you had a great call tonight, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Sunday night as the Cuda look to level this series at one game apiece.
All right, Ted, sounds great. As always, thanks for having me on. I look forward to seeing you as well on Sunday. It'd be a great crowd.
Again, that is Nick Nolenberger, the voice of the San Jose Barracuda, joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network after the Barracuda lost by a final of 6-3 last night. And now they'll be going up against the Eagles again on Sunday. 6 o'clock go time, 5:30 start time, as the San Jose Barracuda look to level the series at one game apiece. The next three games will be in Colorado, as you will be at Colorado on May 6th at 6:05, at Colorado May 7th at 6:05, and then Sunday, like the Wednesday game, if necessary, will be at 2:05 on May 11th on Mother's Day. Let's hear what head coach Sean McCarthy had to say after last night's loss in game one.
How did you see tonight?
As a whole, I thought we were in the game. I thought we shot ourselves in the foot. I thought turnovers, bad line change, you know, when they capitalize on them, they're a good team.
Is that what good, you know, that's something that you guys can take away from, where there are fixable mistakes, but not something that you guys played yourselves out of a game about, just things that you can clean up that maybe will turn the tide on Sunday?
I didn't think that, you know, there were a couple times they had us hemmed in our zone for a little bit, but as an overall, I thought it was a pretty evenly played game. Like I said, it's playoffs. We can't be having these breakdowns now.
Is it a difference that they're a very veteran team, so some degree of, you know, you have a younger team, some maturity maybe?
Yeah, but it's May, it's playoffs. You know, they've had a full year. It's no excuse.
know, the penalty kill was a big topic, but like you guys had a lot of good chances shorthanded. Is that something that maybe you guys pre-scouted, took advantage of? Maybe you get, you know, where their setup is, you might be able to turn some chances the other way. Obviously, Beast had scored, but a couple given up.
Yeah, that, those were pretty much individual efforts. I thought Patrick Giles had a great night for us, and 5-on-5 and penalty kill, and he generated a few of those. Not really something we talked about, just individual efforts.
Mentioned going into Sunday's game to stay out of the penalty box, since they scored pretty much half their goals on those power plays and the late penalty.
Yep, stay out of the penalty box, take better care of the puck, line changes.
So, Coach, how crucial was that delayed penalty goal that they scored? Because that gave them four, which ended up being the winning margin.
Yeah. Yeah, team discipline, something that, you know, we got to get dialed in. And, you know, when you are out there 5-on-6, we got to know what we're doing. We got to get in shooting lanes.
How can the power play be better? Noticeably, you started third period with your second unit.
We got to connect on more plays. You know, we have a plan. We have a structure. You know, I didn't think the execution was as sharp as it could be. I thought the first one was good. I thought the second one wasn't very good. And then I thought the third one was pretty good. You know, we generated some looks, but got to be more consistent execution on it.
5-on-5 throughout the night, it seemed like Colorado did do a good job of kind of clogging up the middle. Mm-hmm. I think their first goal was off of a turnover in the middle. Mm-hmm. Just in general, it was just hard to generate speed through the middle. Mm-hmm. What do you guys have to do better?
Yeah, we can put pucks behind them more often. I thought there was too many kind of three-quarter ice pucks that they were able to transition fast. That's a strength of their team. So I think we can look at it again and pull some things out, but have a little more composure with the puck in some instances, and then not less composure, but take better care of it through the neutral zone.
What do you think of Askarov's performance and maybe the defense in front of him? It looked like they got a lot of traffic, but you guys did a little bit better job clearing out the crease in the third.
You know, I got to look at it again. He gives us a chance every time he plays.
It feels like it wasn't until the third period where you guys were able to start to kind of get some goals in. Mm-hmm. We know the Rain series was a very close-knit. What do you guys need to do to try to actually just score more goals? Do you feel like you're doing things right and the results will come, or do we need to maybe make some tweaks?
No, we're always looking to, you know, make some tweaks and put ourselves in an advantage. I thought mostly it was a little bit of ping-pong through the neutral zone. I thought it was a little little unorganized through there, so I think we can have some better structure through there and take better care of the puck in general.
And we've talked a lot about the lift that the crowd gave you. What was your impression of the crowd? And do you feel that lift worked for the team?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I liked our start. I thought we were really good off the start, and then you know, the one goal against got us on our heels a little bit.
What's the mindset? You know, it's obviously not a 7-game series, but on Sunday it's technically not must win, but you know, getting one at home would change a lot of mentality. What's the message to the group for Sunday?
Yeah, we're coming here expecting to win the game. You know, we know what we can do in that locker room, and we gotta come out and show it on Sunday.
What did it mean to see Roy and Mo drop the puck there?
Yeah, it was awesome. He was a big part of hockey here for a long time, so good to see both of them.
It seems like guys are through the second period. We're kind of waiting for somebody to step up and waiting for somebody to bring the momentum back. What do you have to tell the team to say, hey, look, it's everybody's job to bring that momentum, and who do you think specifically can come and bring that and make Sunday turn the other way?
Yeah, by committee. I think you know, when we go down 4-1, it's, you're not going to score 3 goals in one shift. It's got to be more, you know, you go out, you win your shift, next line over the wall, they win their shift, and you build momentum that way. You know, and I think, you know, between penalties, turnovers, you know, every time we did have momentum rolling our way, I felt like we kind of gave it back.
The Saber and Vincent Van Roo line, that's been a big part of the identity for this Cuda team. What did you think of their performance tonight? Because it felt like every time they were out there, they were making things happen.
Yeah, they're a straight line, you know, so they did some good things, bring some physicality to the game.
One of the things that John McCarthy talked about was having a little bit more composure with the puck, and I think that that's something they do need to work on, especially since Colorado can turn things over and come back in the opposite direction very, very quickly on you. But that's part of learning what it takes to win. It's May, like he said, and you can't be making these mistakes. You can't be blaming youth or inexperience. This is playoff hockey, and you've got to come up with the big plays, which means you've got to take care of the puck. You've got to be composed on the puck. You can't be rushing things. You can't be giving it away. And that's something that San Jose has to, you know, rectify going into game number 2 of this series. But, you know, frustrating loss. I don't think anyone is going to deny that. But at the same time, you saw a lot of opportunity where the Barracuda had the ability to take that game in spite of all the mistakes. And I think that's the biggest takeaway, is they gave themselves an opportunity, even not having close to their best night. If they play that much better, they're going to give themselves a great opportunity to get a win. All right, so we will see you Sunday at 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock go time, right here on the Sharks Audio Network, as the San Jose Barracuda look to level this series at one game apiece. For the San Jose Barracuda and the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.